Russ, he said, wondering why he hadn't figured it out earlier. Natasha turned them into little statues. Yasmin nodded. That's Juan, she said, pointing to a figure of a small Asian boy sitting in a rocking chair. He was holding a stuffed rabbit. In the end, he couldn't keep up with the work like the rest of us. Natasha finally lost her patience. And there, Eli. Yasmin pressed her finger against the glass, inches from a rangy boy with a mop of blonde hair. He was smiling, like all the others. Alex supposed that was a creepy side effect of the spell, but his eyes were shut tight in one final act of defiance. He went ahead with his plan and tried to jump Natasha when she least expected it, Yasmin said. It didn't work. She knelt down, her eyes level with the bottom shelf of the china cabinet now. Alex identified Claire before Yasmin even pointed to her, a pretty girl drawing water from a well, with eyes that radiated kindness. She looked like someone who would grow up to be a teacher or a nurse. In the end, it was just the two of us, Yasmin said. Me and Claire. Until one day, there was a knock at the door. That happens sometimes. We get visitors. Grocery delivery. Landlord. Neighbors. Even the police from time to time. Not since I've been here, Alex said. I'm sure people have come, Yasmin explained. Only when Natasha's not in the apartment, we can't even hear the knocking, and they can't hear us either. It's like there's a wall between us and the outside world, but that changes when Natasha's home. Occasionally she has to let people inside. If not, someone might grow suspicious. Alex wondered if his family had ever knocked on the door to apartment 4E. Maybe he had been standing on the other side of the wall at the time, just a few feet away. That day was different than usual, Yasmin continued, because we were actually expecting a visitor. The pipes in the kitchen sink had been leaking for a week, and there wasn't anything that Natasha's magic could do to fix it, which was a little bit funny. So she had finally called the plumber. Claire and I did as we were told and stayed in the nursery. We could scream and shout all we wanted to down there, but no one would hear a thing in the apartment. While we waited in the dark, Claire took my hands and told me the truth. She had broken the kitchen pipes herself, knowing that a plumber would have to come. There was a note taped to the underside of the sink explaining everything. It begged whoever found it to send help as quickly as possible. That was a good idea, Alex said. It was, replied Yasmin. Only Natasha figured it out somehow, and when she unlocked the door to the nursery, the note was in her hands. Yasmin cleared her throat. Claire didn't even try to talk her way out of it. She spent her last minutes making sure Natasha knew that I hadn't been involved. Yasmin looked drained, like someone recovering from a long illness, but not nearly as sad anymore. By sharing her story, she had shed a portion of her grief. So now you know, Yasmin said. That's why I was so mean to you in the beginning. I didn't want to risk getting close to someone else and losing them again. I'm sorry. She hugged him, and Alex hugged her back. It should have been weird and awkward. She was a girl, after all, but it wasn't that way at all. It felt right. They were still trapped, but they were no longer alone. Can the spell on your friends be reversed? Alex asked when they had parted. You know, like in a fairy tale, when the witch dies and everything goes back to the way it was in the end. This isn't a story, Alex. Claire had it right the first time. All we can really do is be patient and hope something changes. She peeked into the kitchen to make sure Lenore hadn't moved. I agree with you about the blue mist, she whispered. I think it's what keeps the witch young. For all we know, Natasha could be hundreds of years old, maybe thousands. We're just kids. How can we hope to outsmart her? Alex stared at the figurines through his ghostly reflection in the glass. He remembered what Natasha had said his second day in the apartment when she was on the verge of casting the spell that would have added him to her collection. Just be a doll and stand still. And whatever you do, don't close your eyes. Like a photograph. It gave him an idea. Are those the same outfits that your friends were wearing when the spell was cast on them? He asked.
Why?
Just go with it.
Yeah, Yasmin said. Those hideous smiles are fake, and I doubt that Claire ever got water from a well in her life, but everything else is right on target. Look, you can even see Juan's little watch. He always wore that thing.
Good, Alex said, scanning the figurines more carefully now. That means it should definitely be there.
What?
Yasmin asked. I'll tell you in a second. He traced his finger along the glass, trying not to rush. If I'm right, he thought, this changes everything. He searched the figurines once, and then a second time, just to make sure. There was no question about it. No one was wearing a unicorn pendant. She promised that she would never take it off, Alex thought with rising excitement. That means she isn't there. Natasha never turned her into a figurine. There's a way out of this place, he said. I don't know how yet, but I'm positive it can be done.
What makes you so sure?
Alex smiled. Because I know someone who escaped, he said. 13. Writer's Block. Alex and Yasmin went back to the library and closed the door behind them. I have so much to tell you, Alex said. In his eagerness to finally share everything, Alex inadvertently abandoned all his storytelling skills. He hopped from topic to topic, sometimes in mid-sentence, and often lost his train of thought. Fortunately, Yasmin asked good questions, forcing him to backtrack when necessary. In the end, she managed to learn everything there was to know about Unicorn Girl, the forest that Alex had glimpsed through the bedroom door, and his sudden shortage of stories. Gradually, the resigned look in Yasmin's eyes was replaced by a glimmer of hope.
You really think we can get out of here? She asked.
Yes.
What's the plan?
The children smiled at one another. We need to search the rest of these books, Alex said. Unicorn Girl might have written about her escape plan. If it worked for her, maybe it will work for us.
And if she didn't write it down?
Then maybe she said something else that can help us, Alex said. You never know. The more we learn about Natasha, the better. Yasmin tilted her head upward in order to take in the thousands of books that still needed to be searched.
You can't do this on your own. Show me where you left off and I'll start looking.
Don't you have nursery stuff to do? Alex asked.
I'll be okay, Yasmin said. I'll just get up earlier tomorrow and take care of my chores first. Right now, finding how this girl got out of here is the second most important thing we've got to do.
What's the first most? Yasmin gave him a playful shove toward the desk.
You have to write, she said. This whole plan falls apart if Natasha decides to make a porcelain Alex out of you.
For the rest of the day, he sat at the desk and tried to think of a good idea. Nothing came. Alex knew from experience that forcing an idea to the surface seldom worked. It only scared them away, like screaming at a flock of birds while expecting one to land on your finger. You had to let them come at their own pace. This was all well and good when you were writing stories in your bedroom at night, stories that no one would ever read, but not when your life depended on it. His frustration grew. Pencil points snapped. Pages were torn. When Alex's sighs of dismay grew impossible to ignore, Yasmin dropped the stack of books she was searching and stood over him, arms akimbo.
Okay, she said. What's the issue? I have complete and total writer's block, Alex said, plunking his head on the desk. In fact, I think it's fair to say that I'm never going to write another sentence again for the rest of my life.
Don't be dramatic, Yasmin said. You're probably just thinking too hard. You remember any of the stories from the notebooks that got torn up?
Some of them, he said, but it doesn't matter. I can't write them all over again.
Why not?
Because I wrote them already, Alex said. If I do it again, they won't be the same.
Maybe they'll be better.
You don't understand, Alex said, turning his head away. Just forget it.
Yasmin kicked his foot.
You don't have time to be grumpy, she said. Who cares if they're the same or not? They're just stories.
They're not just stories, Alex exclaimed. Some of my favorites were in those notebooks. Like, there was this one I was really proud of about this girl who moves into a new house, and there's this tree in her backyard that promises her it will grant her wish if she hangs up something she truly loves in its branches. And at first the girl is thrilled because she's getting these awesome wishes in exchange for little stuff like necklaces and toys, only the tree keeps wanting more valuable things until finally it asks for her baby brother, and the girl knows it's wrong but she's sort of changed with getting all her wishes granted, so she goes to the crib one night and...
I'm confused, Yasmin interjected.
Sorry, Alex said. I'm bad at summarizing. The plot would make a lot more sense if you could read it, which, of course, you can't, because...
I'm not confused about the story, Yasmin said. I'm confused about the notebooks. You seem really bummed that they're gone, but weren't you going to chuck them in the fire anyway? You couldn't have liked those stories that much.
The words hit Alex like a cold splash of water. For a few moments, he was too astonished to speak.
You're right, he said. I was going to destroy all three of them myself. That's what got me into this whole mess in the first place. So now that they're gone, why do I miss them so much?
Beats me, Yasmin said. I never understood why you were getting rid of them in the first place. Alex thought about telling her what had happened in school that day, after the math teacher got her phone call. But he was afraid it might change her opinion of him. He told her a lesser truth instead.
I wanted to be someone different, Alex said. Not the weird kid who likes monsters.
But you are weird, she said.
So what? It's cool.
It's not cool, Alex insisted. Instead of sports trophies like my brother, you know what's on my shelves? Stupid plastic models of vampires and werewolves and mummies. When my family and I go on vacation, I beg them to take me on ghost tours instead of amusement parks.
He lowered his voice as if confessing a great secret. I have Walking Dead pajamas.
And I can tell you the number of every Mets player all the way back to 2003. Even the guys who only had a few at-bats, countered Yasmin. I spent an entire winter break memorizing them. Don't believe me? Xavier Nady, number 22. Willie Colazo, number 36. She shrugged her shoulders. We all have our things.
Alex wondered if she might be right. Was writing scary stories any stranger than memorizing random numbers sewn to the backs of uniforms? It made him feel better thinking about it like that.
Maybe it's not just me who's weird, Alex thought. Maybe we're all weird in different ways.
Yasmin leaned over the desk and spun the notebook in her direction.
I thought you said you couldn't come up with any ideas, she said. There's a whole list here.
Alex snatched the book away. Don't look, he said. They're awful.
You're probably just being too picky, Yasmin said. Come on. Hit me with them.
Alex hesitated. He never shared his ideas before a story was completely finished. On the other hand, nothing else was working, and he was growing desperate. If he didn't think of an idea soon, he'd find himself without a story to tell Natasha in a couple of nights. He slid the notebook across the desk. The list was a pitted battlefield of pencil slashes and erasure marks. Story ideas. Girl who finds out her parents are monsters. Crossed out. Kids who go to the bathroom during class but never come back. Crossed out. Mailbox that eats people. Crossed out. School locker that leads into another world. Crossed out. Creepy house at Halloween. Crossed out. Kale. Crossed out. Ghost that haunts other ghosts. Crossed out. Nightmare catcher. Crossed out. Let's see, Yasmin said, running her finger down the page with a thoughtful expression. How about this one? Mailbox that eats people. I can see that. You reach in for the mail, something bites you, pretty scary. As an idea, maybe, Alex conceded. But where do I go from there? The mailbox ate Bob's hand. Bob got an axe and chopped down the mailbox. There's not much to it. Maybe the mailbox needs to deliver Bob's hand somewhere. Ew, Alex said, impressed. Let's see what else you have, she said. Creepy house at Halloween? Because that's never been done before. You're not being graded on originality, Alex. You just need a story. Here, I'll get you started. All the kids were afraid to trick-or-treat at Bob's house because he had a meat hook instead of a hand due to a terrible experience with a mailbox. Funny, Yasmin said with just a hint of a smile. What about this one? Ghost that haunts other ghosts. That's different. Same problem with the mailbox one, Alex said. It sounds good on paper, but there's no way to make it into a story. Why would a ghost haunt another ghost? I don't know, Yasmin said. Why do they haunt people? Revenge, usually, Alex said. They could have been murdered, or someone moved into the house they used to live in and they still think of it as their house. Sounds like they're just jealous because they're not alive anymore. Alex said. He picked up his pencil and added, jealous ghost, to the list. It wasn't enough to start a story, but there was something there, something he could use. He could feel it. Miss Coral had taught him that good writers didn't necessarily come up with better ideas than other people. They simply recognized the good ones. Jealous ghost, Yasmin read, nodding her head in consideration. That could work. Maybe, Alex said. Let me think about it. Do your thing, Yasmin said. I'll keep searching the books. I have to tell you, though, I'm starting to wonder if this is all a wild goose chase. Maybe you already found everything this girl has written. She was wrong. 14. The Missing Ingredient. Alex woke up early the next morning and trudged back to the library. He hadn't made any headway with his jealous ghost story the day before, but his ideas grew best in the soil of sleep, and he felt on the verge of a breakthrough. The story's almost loose, he thought. I just have to pry it out. He sat in his chair and got straight to work. The first story he wrote was called Quarters. It was about a dead kid who misses video games and haunts this retro arcade. He gets jealous since all he can do is watch the living kids play, so he messes up their games, making the screens flicker and bug out at inopportune moments. Alex got about 2 pages into the story and stopped. It wasn't working. He couldn't say exactly why. It was like a potential friendship that had all the right ingredients, but no chemistry. As Yasmin entered the library and started searching the shelves, Alex flipped to a new page. In his second story, a recently deceased girl grows envious of the ghost next door, who haunts a much nicer house. Alex got a little further into this one, close to 4 pages, before giving up. It's no good, he thought, slapping the can of pencils off the desk. He removed his glasses and rubbed his eyes with the palms of his hands. After reading to Natasha last night, he was down to his final story. The pressure was making it hard to concentrate. Yasmin shouted in jubilation. I found another entry!" she exclaimed, holding a book aloft. Or, at least, Alex assumed that was what she was holding. Yasmin had climbed past the midway point of the tower and was little more than a small figure in the distance.
"Don't read it!"
Alex shouted, cupping his hands to his mouth.
"Wait for me!"
"Okay, I'm heading down!" The stairs shook beneath Yasmin's feet. Alex, too excited to wait, started toward her. They met somewhere in the middle and huddled together on the stairs, their backs pressed against a bookcase.
"She wrote a lot this time," Yasmin said.
"Good," Alex said, out of breath. "The more we know, the better." Yasmin propped the book, titled Stories That Watch You Sleep, against her bent legs. She opened it to the page she had been holding with her index finger. Handwritten words covered both margins. There were no cute pictures of unicorns, no bubbly little hearts above the eyes. Instead, letters were slashed into the page like paper wounds.
"Whoa,"
Alex said. "Is this even the same girl?" "Only one way to find out," replied Yasmin. They read it together.
"The witch thinks I'm stupid, but she's stupid. She don't know what I've been up to. She don't know how good I've got with the plants."
Night fell. The princess realized that she was completely lost. With the first stirrings of true panic, she lifted her lantern and followed the path, praying that it would lead back to the castle.
"I figured out how to make a sleeping potion."
In moments, she found herself surrounded by mist-shrouded trees, their skeletal branches perfect for princess snatching. She increased her pace, no longer caring that the hem of her beautiful gown was getting splattered by mud. For the first time in her life, she realized that there were places in the world where not even a princess was safe.
"Well, almost figured out."
In time, she came to a stone bridge that spanned a narrow stream.
"I tried to put a few drops in the cat's water, but the cat won't drink it because it smells so bad, so I forced myself to drink some."
A shadowy figure waited on the other side. The princess thought that it might have been a man, but it was hard to tell. Every time she looked directly at it, her eyes blurred and went out of focus.
"Slept for a long, long time. See, witch? Anyone can do magic."
"Hello?" the princess asked.
"Hello,"
the shadow replied. The beauty of the shadow's voice surprised her. Its singing voice was even lovelier, though the princess would not have recognized any of the songs.
"Sleeping potion. One part suckleweed, two parts Gretchen's fury, four parts yellow glass, pinch of demon's mane. I can't put it in the witch's drink. If she smells it, she will know. There must be something I can use to hide it. I will keep trying. Close, so close. Then, when the witch is asleep, I'm going to steal her keys and go home."
"I think I'm lost," the princess said.
"So it seems."
"I'm looking for the castle."
"That's a long way off."
"Could you take me there?" she asked. "I'm a princess."
"I'm a shadow," said the shadow. "Why don't you cross the bridge?"
"Is that the fastest way to the castle?"
"Cross the bridge, and I'll whisper the answer in your ear."
"But what if she finds me again? What if she drags me back here?"
The princess, mesmerized by the shadow's voice, found herself walking across the bridge. As she passed the midway point, she was able to see the shadow more clearly. Its shape kept changing. Sometimes it was a man, sometimes a woman. Sometimes it was something else altogether. The princess tried to stop walking, but the voice lassoed her forward.
"Come on, little princess," the shadow said, opening its arms wide. "Just a few steps more."
"I wish I had magic. Then I could turn her into a toad or a snail and laugh at her all day long. But I don't have magic. All I have is this knife."
I hate her, hate her, hate her. It is not sharp, but it is sharp enough.
Yasmin closed the book.
Unicorn Girl got dark, she said. It sounds like she's planning to kill Natasha in her sleep.
Except obviously she didn't, Yasmin replied.
That doesn't mean the other part of her plan didn't work. She still could have escaped.
He considered this for a moment.
Maybe she just chickened out on the actual stabbing part. Saying it is one thing, doing it is another. I hate Natasha, but I wouldn't be able to go through with it. You?
Yasmin thought about it and then shook her head.
We'll never know what happened for sure, Alex said. But the important part is that we now have the recipe for a sleeping potion. Do we have those ingredients?
Yes, Yasmin said. They're pretty common, actually. But...
So you can make it?
Listen, Alex. This girl must have been here a long time ago if Natasha was still making potions. Even if I knew how to make the liquid base I'd need, we don't have the right equipment anymore. Natasha said she got rid of it all when she switched over to essential oils.
Does it matter? Alex asked. Wouldn't the ingredients be the same?
I don't know, Yasmin said. I guess it might work. These magical recipes usually have to be just right, though. If not, bad things happen, like with the danglers.
She twisted the brim of her cap in her hands, thinking it over.
Still, as long as I keep the ratios the same, and it's not like Natasha would miss any of the ingredients.
She shrugged her shoulders.
It's worth a try, I guess.
You can do it, Alex said. I know you can.
Even if I do, Yasmin said, there's still a problem. The smell. It must be from the suckleweed. That stuff stinks something awful, and I have no idea what we could use to mask it. Without that missing ingredient, the oil is useless.
So we keep looking, Alex said. Unicorn Girl must have written it down somewhere.
I'm not so sure about that, Yasmin said. At this point, she seems more in action mode than writing mode. The moment she discovered the missing ingredient, I think she'd just move ahead with her plan.
We have to at least try.
I have to try, Yasmin said. You have to write a story. You only have one left, Alex. Who knows what Natasha will do if you don't...
Alex grabbed her forearm in excitement. A story! He exclaimed. That could actually work! You're a genius!
Huh?
We need to find out the missing ingredient, right? And we know...
A piercing yowl cut off his sentence. It was coming from far below them.
Alex looked over the railing and saw Lenore materialize on top of the desk. She looked up at them and yowled again.
No! Yasmin exclaimed. How long has she been down there?
The whole time, I bet,
Alex said, cursing himself for forgetting about the cat.
She probably heard everything.
She's going to tell Natasha. We have to stop her!
They ran down the stairs as fast as they could.
Lenore didn't turn invisible as Alex figured she would. Instead, she was doing something to the books they had left on the desk. He couldn't see exactly what without slowing down, and he wasn't sure it mattered. The most important thing was to keep the little spy away from her master.
But why make such a dramatic appearance? He wondered. Why not just remain invisible and tell Natasha later?
He had no idea. Lenore, Alex said as he finally reached the bottom of the stairs. I don't know what you heard, but it's not what you think. I was just running story ideas by Yasmin, okay?
Lenore gave him a look of insulted disbelief.
Just because I'm a cat doesn't make me stupid.
As Alex moved straight ahead, Yasmin circled around to the back of the desk. The idea wasn't to sneak up on Lenore, who clearly knew she was coming. They were just trying to cut off any exit paths. Then again, Alex wasn't convinced that either one of them would be able to stop Lenore even if they tried. She might have looked like a lazy house cat, but she was a fierce fighter.
Lenore, Yasmin began, her voice gentle. Please,
We helped you, remember? Let's be friends.
Behind Alex, the door handle rattled. He spun around just as Natasha burst into the room. She eyed the two children with triumph.
Why the guilty looks? The witch asked.
That's why Lenore started yowling, Alex thought. She heard Natasha come home. She was calling her to the library so we would be caught red-handed.
We're not doing anything, Yasmin said weakly.
True,
Natasha said, picking up a pencil from the desk.
You're not in the nursery tending to my plants.
She leveled her gaze on Alex.
And you're not writing. So what exactly are you two doing?
The pencil in Natasha's hand transformed into a yellow snake that slithered between her fingers.
Tell me, she said, before I forget to ask nicely.
Yasmin was helping me with research for a story, Alex said. I want to make sure I get all the details right.
Research? Natasha asked dubiously.
That's right, Yasmin said, going with it.
Research. A whole lot of research. Research about what?
Natasha asked. She kept her eyes glued to Yasmin, waiting for an answer.
You know,
Yasmin said, shifting from foot to foot.
About, well, Alex came to me at breakfast. We had oatmeal, and he asked me, he asked if I could help him learn some things.
About magic oils, Alex said.
He folded his arms across his chest to hide his trembling hands. I wanted to get all the little details right. Yasmin's the expert. Natasha's face tightened. The pencil snake, sensing its master's discomfiture, bared its lead fangs in Alex's direction.
The expert? Natasha asked. That girl doesn't know a single thing that I didn't teach her.
I wouldn't be so sure about that, Alex said. I think Yasmin might have picked up some really fascinating techniques on her own. Who knows? Maybe she could teach you a thing or two.
What? Natasha snarled, glaring at Yasmin. She's not even a witch!
Yasmin shot Alex a nervous look.
What are you doing?
True, Alex said in a pacifying tone, stepping between them. Obviously, Yasmin wasn't my first choice, only I couldn't go to you for research. I want the story to be a surprise. Otherwise, what's the point? This seemed to mollify Natasha somewhat. The anger that faded from her face, however, was quickly replaced by a fiendish grin.
You wouldn't be telling me a story, storyteller, she asked. Would you?
Of course not.
We'll see about that, she said. Lenore!
The cat leaped gracefully off the desk and landed at Natasha's feet.
Tell me what these two were really doing.
Alex looked at Yasmin. She was trying to keep her face as impassive as possible, but he could see the panic swirling in her eyes.
What do we do? He thought.
If they ran, they would just be admitting their guilt. And where could they go? On the other hand, if they stayed here and Lenore told Natasha they had been planning their escape...
There's no way out of this, Alex thought.
Natasha traced a line in the air from her ear to Lenore's mouth. As she did, a narrow tube of swirling green water appeared. Lenore meowed into the bottom of the tube over and over again, and tiny bubbles floated through the water and up to the witch's ear.
It's an animal translator, Alex thought.
Unfortunately, Natasha did not look pleased by whatever Lenore was saying. Alex and Yasmin shared a concerned look.
Really?
The witch asked, her tone more accusatory than surprised.
That can't be right.
More meowing.
Are you sure?
Some final meows, more insistent this time, as though Lenore was getting annoyed with her master. Natasha, for her part,
looked like she wanted to kick the cat across the room.
"So be it," Natasha said.
She waved the translator out of existence and faced the children.
"Lenore tells me she's been here all morning," Natasha said through gritted teeth, "and that what you just said is the absolute and total truth."
Alex clamped his mouth shut so his jaw didn't fall open in shock.
"Lenore lied for us," he thought.
"After all the trouble you two caused with the danglers," Natasha continued, "I decided to make a surprise visit to check up on you. Looks like you've learned your lesson. Now make sure you don't forget it."
She reached for the doorknob and then looked back over her shoulder at Alex.
"I look forward to your story tonight. Hopefully all that research paid off."
"That particular story isn't finished yet," Alex said. "Maybe tomorrow or the next."
"Tonight," Natasha said with a threatening glare. "I can't wait."
She left the room.
"I am so confused right now," Yasmin said. "I thought Lenore was making all that noise to tell Natasha what we were up to, but..."
"She heard Natasha come home early," Alex said. "She was warning us to get down from the tower. Less suspicious that way."
"And look at what she did with the books," Yasmin added, gesturing toward a neat stack on the table. "Like total idiots, we left them open to the Unicorn Girl entries. Lenore closed them all so Natasha wouldn't see. She wasn't tattling on us. She was saving us. But why?"
Both children turned toward the cat, who hopped up on the table and lay down as if nothing had happened. Yasmin's ointment had done its work. Her wounds were almost entirely healed.
"Because we were kind," Alex said.
"And kindness beats cruelty every time." He reached down and stroked Lenore's head. She let him.
"You're a prisoner just like us, aren't you?" Yasmin asked, bending down. "We're going to escape. Or try to, at least."
She rubbed the cat's stomach.
"Do you want to come with us?"
Alex wasn't sure how many of the words Lenore understood without a magical translator, but it must have been enough. She began to purr. Alex and Yasmin looked at each other and smiled. Now they were three.
15. Dangerous Lies.
Alex hadn't been lying to Natasha. In order to write his next story, he really did need to ask Yasmin some questions about magical oils. By the time they were done, he had filled nearly 2 pages with notes.
"Why did you make it seem like I know more about this stuff than she does?" Yasmin asked.
"We both know that isn't true."
"I wanted to see how she reacted when I questioned her expertise," Alex said. "Have you heard her grill me after I read a story? Say I don't know this or I don't know that?"
"Yeah,"
Yasmin said, stifling a grin. "I've noticed how much that gets under your skin."
"It does not,"
Alex said.
Yasmin raised her eyebrows.
"Okay, maybe a little bit."
"More than a little bit. The important thing is that Natasha's a know-it-all. And when I claimed you know more than she does, she couldn't take it. She reacted just the way I hoped."
"You wanted to get her mad?"
"Yes," Alex said. "Angry people don't think clearly. They let things slip. We can use that to our advantage."
"There's a few disadvantages to getting Natasha mad, too. Like she might lose her temper and turn us into a matching pair of socks."
"I know," Alex said. "But if we really want to escape, we need to start taking some risks."
He explained the rest of his plan. Yasmin listened with growing incredulity.
"I don't know," she said when he had finished. "It might work, if we're lucky.
But wouldn't it be safer to search the books in the library first? Maybe I was wrong. Maybe Unicorn Girl did write the missing ingredient somewhere."
"Even if she did," Alex said, "it could take weeks for us to find it.
So many bad things could happen before then. I might not be able to think of a story. Natasha could wake up on the wrong side of the bed and decide she's tired of both of us. The sooner we get out of here, the better. But if Natasha figures out what you're trying to do...
She won't, Alex said. I'll be careful. Like a word ninja.
You better be, Yasmin said, or this is going to be the shortest story you ever told.
After that, Alex settled into his chair and started writing. The story came easily. It turned out that he wasn't suffering from writer's block after all. He just wasn't ready to write his ghost story yet. Once he changed gears, the words flowed like running water. He finished just before dinner. Yasmin had outdone herself. Honey-glazed ham, scalloped potatoes, cornbread, and fresh applesauce. There was far too much food for one person to eat, and Alex knew that afterward he would have to dump most of it into the trash. Natasha didn't eat leftovers, and she refused to allow the children a single bite. It was the worst of her casual cruelties. As Alex refilled the witch's glass, the succulent smells of the feast teasing his empty stomach, he imagined her taking a sip of lemonade and falling face first into her potatoes, sound asleep. The image brought a tiny smile to his lips.
"What's wrong with you?"
Natasha snapped, turning in his direction.
"Why are you happy?"
"Just looking forward to tonight's story," Alex said. "I think you'll like it."
Natasha shrugged and tore off a piece of cornbread. Alex was no longer surprised by her indifference, though he still found it puzzling. Despite her impressive library, Natasha had given no indication that she truly loved stories the way that he did. They were there to serve a purpose, like a hastily prepared meal. "All she cares about is keeping the apartment calm and under control," he thought, "feeding it darkness like you'd toss hunks of meat to a wild beast." Alex wished he understood more about the nature of apartment 4E. Why couldn't Natasha use her magic to control it? Did it have a mind of its own? For the most part, the apartment helped Natasha by giving her the extra space she needed and bringing new captives to her door. But there were other times, especially when the apartment was in earthquake mode, that Natasha seemed almost afraid of it. Perhaps solving this mystery would help them, perhaps not. Right now, Alex had to remain focused on the task at hand. After Natasha finished her second slice of pecan pie, they moved into the living room. Every movement he made seemed forced. Every word he spoke sounded wooden and exaggerated. He felt like a bad actor in a horror movie. "It's just your imagination," he thought. "There's no way the witch has any idea."
"You're not telling me everything," Natasha said.
Alex nearly dropped the nightbook in his hands. His throat suddenly felt as dry as a sandstorm.
"What are you talking about?" he asked.
"Don't play stupid with me," Natasha said. "You know exactly what I'm talking about."
Alex hesitated, afraid to speak.
"There's a reason you wanted to destroy your nightbooks," Natasha exclaimed. "Something happened. Something that gave you that final little nudge. Maybe that very same day."
Alex let out a slow sigh of relief. "This isn't about tonight's plan at all," he thought.
"Nothing happened," Alex said. "I just decided that it was time for a change."
"I wonder if I can make your nose grow like Pinocchio," Natasha said, staring at his face with a thoughtful expression. "I've never tried it before. Something might go terribly wrong."
She reached over and poked the tip of his nose.
"But you know me. I'm always up for a little experimentation."
Alex swallowed nervously. Why is she bringing this up now?
"It's not worth talking about," he said.
Natasha squeezed the arms of her chair and pulled herself forward. She grinned with triumph, her eyes popping out.
"So something did happen," she exclaimed. "You admit it!"
If Alex and the witch had been alone, he would have just told her. Living through that morning again would have been humiliating, but in the end, Natasha's opinion didn't really matter to him. The problem was Yasmin. Once she discovered the truth, he was afraid that she wouldn't want to be his friend anymore.
"Tell me," Natasha said. "Now."
"No," Alex said. Natasha's mouth fell open in a look of such exaggerated surprise that Alex almost laughed. He wondered how long it had been since someone refused her.
"I'm not asking," she said, her face growing flushed like a spoiled child. "You either tell me or..."
Yasmin shrieked and jumped to her feet.
"You feel that?"
she asked. Natasha gave her a quizzical look.
"Feel what?" "The floor just trembled," Yasmin said. "I think the apartment is about to have one of its earthquakes." "I didn't feel anything," Natasha said, but there was a slight quiver in her voice.
I was right, Alex thought. The apartment does frighten her.
"There!" Yasmin exclaimed. "Another one! I don't think you can feel it because your feet aren't on the floor!"
Alex's feet were on the floor, and he felt nothing. It was clear that Yasmin was lying. She had seen that Alex was treading in dangerous waters and made up an entire earthquake as a distraction.
"I felt it too, Natasha," Alex said, opening his notebook. "I should probably start. It feels like it's going to be a bad one."
The witch spun in his direction.
"Then what are you waiting for?"
she screeched, clawing nervously at her hair.
"Read!"
Alex paused a moment to meet Yasmin's eyes.
"Thank you,"
and began. Neverworm. The great monster had terrorized the land for as long as anyone could remember. It swatted away armies and laughed at fire. Nothing could stop it. In desperation, the witches joined forces and cast a special sleeping spell. No one really thought it would work, but it did. The great monster closed its eyes and toppled over. 1,000 trees fell beneath its weight. At long last, its reign of terror was over. The next step should have been to kill the great monster before it woke up. After all, the monster was not immortal. It could be slain like any other beast, with spell or sword or spear. Unfortunately, precious gems grew inside the great monster's mouth like minerals in a cave. They would stop growing when the monster took its last breath. And people are greedy. Instead of killing the sleeping monster, the witches built a city in its shadow. Over the years, they grew rich and prosperous from the monster's gems. They never went inside the mouth themselves. Each month, they selected a young boy, always from a poor family, and tossed him into the gaping maw. Sometimes the boy returned to the city with treasure held high. Most of the time, however, the boy was never seen again. The great monster might have been asleep, but it still needed to eat. In time, the original enchantment wore off, but the witches made sure that the great monster's slumber continued. Every morning they scaled its body and funneled a powerful sleeping potion down its fifth ear. The recipe for this potion was as old as time itself. Rat bones dissolved in a pitcher plant, widow orchid, powdered beetle shells. The most important ingredient, however, was bindweed, a rare plant that grew in swamps and sucked up smells instead of water. Bindweed was the only thing in the world that could hide the powerful stench of the sleeping potion. This was important because the great monster had as many noses as teeth. Without bindweed, the terrible smell of the potion would wake it up. 1,000 years passed in this manner, and then one day all the bindweed withered and died. The wisest witches gathered together to pool their knowledge. Was there a different ingredient they could use in place of bindweed? Serpent's tongue? Snail mucus? Charred plug seed? Nothing worked. The potion smelled worse than ever. So the witches called on the great warriors of the city. There was no other choice. They would have to kill the great monster once and for all before it was too late. That night, while the warriors sharpened their spears, the baker's daughter entered the golden hall. She was small, both in stature and age, but very, very clever. The other witches had never met her before. She lived in the poor section of the city, where a proper witch never went.
"I've found a replacement for bindweed," the baker's daughter announced. "It'll take the smell away so you can put the great monster back to sleep."
"Nonsense," said the eldest witch. "Nothing can replace bindweed."
"Nightberry juice," proclaimed the baker's daughter.
The witches laughed. Nightberries made excellent pie, but they had no magical properties at all.
"Foolish child," said the eldest witch. "You know nothing of real magic."
"Let me prove it to you," said the baker's daughter. "Give me some of your famous sleeping potion."
The witch snapped her fingers, and a servant brought out a vial of the potion. It smelled like a dead skunk that had been lying in the sun for days. The girl pinched her nose and withdrew a bottle of violet liquid from her cloak. She poured a drop into the vial. The smell went away instantly.
"Impossible," the eldest witch said. "Nightberry juice doesn't hold that kind of power."
She ordered the servant to bring out a second vial of the sleeping potion. The baker's daughter added a drop of liquid from her bottle. The smell vanished again. The eldest witch was convinced.
"Tell the warriors to stand down,"
she announced, snatching the bottle from the girl's hand.
"Our problem is solved. The monster will continue to sleep, and we shall mine its gems as always."
The baker's daughter watched her with a curious expression.
"Perhaps you were hoping for a reward," the eldest witch asked with a cruel twist of her lips. "If so, you should have kept your ingredient a secret. You could have named your treasure once you proved it worked. But now that we know it's simple nightberry juice, there's no reason to reward you."
The baker's daughter bowed her head.
"How foolish of me," she said. "I wish I was wise, like a witch."
"On the other hand, we can't have you telling people that you were the one who solved our problem," the witch said. "You will leave at once and never return. A horse and supplies wait for you beyond the city walls. We will tell your parents that you drowned in the river."
"My mother and father are already dead," the baker's daughter said. "As is my brother."
There was a sharpness to her voice that had not been there before.
"Even easier then," said the witch, not interested.
She waved her hand. There was a flash of light, and the baker's daughter found herself on the outskirts of the city. An old gelding was waiting for her, as promised. The girl rode the horse to the top of a large hill a few miles from the city. It was as good a spot as any from which to watch. She sat down in the grass. In the distance, the great monster slumbered. The baker's daughter could see its claws from here, as big as trees, but far sharper. She imagined what was happening right now. No doubt the witches had already made a batch of new potion with the liquid from the girl's bottle. Someone would be pouring the potion into the fifth ear, thinking that she was saving everyone in the entire city. The baker's daughter smiled. The eldest witch was right. Nightberry juice had no magical properties. But the bottle that the baker's daughter brought to the witches had been filled with more than just nightberry juice. There was a pinch of neverworm in there as well, from the patch that the baker's daughter had found while poisoning all the bindweed. Such a possibility had never occurred to the eldest witch, for who would be mad enough to do such a thing? Neverworm not only erased the smell of any potion it was added to, it erased its magic as well. In fact, just the tiniest touch of Neverworm could undo the most powerful enchantment. The baker's daughter only wished the rest of her family could be here to see her revenge. Her sweet brother, who had been thrown into the mouth of the great monster and never returned, her poor father, dead of a broken heart, and her mother, who followed him soon afterward. She missed them with a love both fierce and terrible. The girl removed a frosted roll from her cloak. She had baked it earlier this morning, using her family's recipe. As the monster awoke and the screams began, she took a tiny bite. It was delicious. The misting room had dissipated several minutes beforehand, giving Alex a clear view of Natasha's face. She looked livid.
"What was that?" she asked.
Alex tried to look as hurt as possible.
"You didn't like it?" he asked. "Really? I wrote it for you. I figured since the story was about magic, you might..."
"Why was the witch fooled so easily by a simple... girl?"
she shrieked, leaping to her feet. She poked him in the chest with the long nail of her index finger.
"Are you saying that I'm stupid? That I'm gullible? Is that what you're trying to tell me?"
Natasha was so self-centered that she assumed the story was about her. Alex had hoped this would be the case. If she's upset, she's more likely to slip up and tell us what we need to know. Still, he had to be careful. He couldn't push her too far.
"It's just a story," Alex said. "I needed a foolish witch in order to make the ending work. She's just make-believe, a character. Obviously, a brilliant witch like you, a witch who knows more about magic than anyone else in the world, a witch so amazing that..."
He saw Yasmin give a little shake of her head.
"Too much, too much.
Anyway, you never would have fallen for it." Natasha nodded, drinking it up.
"That's right," she said. "I would have seen right through her."
"You would have tested the potion first," Alex said. "Made sure it actually worked before you sent someone to use it on the monster."
"Obviously,"
Natasha said. "And you would have investigated why all the bindweed died to begin with," Alex said. "I mean, the only herb that can erase the smell of a potion suddenly gets wiped out? That's pretty suspicious." Natasha laughed into the back of her hand.
"What?"
Alex asked.
"Bindweed," she said. "Yasmin tell you to use that? That part of your research?"
Alex brightened.
"You noticed," he exclaimed. "I thought you'd like the story better if I used real magical ingredients instead of just making them up. Yasmin was a big help."
"Neverworm isn't real, obviously," Yasmin admitted, "and I had to guess at what ingredients might be used in the sleeping potion, but I'm pretty sure that recipe could work." She ignored Natasha's dismissive chortle. "And I know for a fact that bindweed conceals magical odors. It was Claire who told me that, and she was an expert." Yasmin glared at Natasha in defiance, as though daring the witch to contradict her. The witch stopped laughing.
"There's only one expert girl," Natasha said. "Me. And I'm here to tell you that bindweed is good for exactly one thing. Combining magical ingredients that would otherwise be incapable of working together. It's magic glue, nothing more."
Yasmin shook her head in amusement, as though Natasha were a poor student who had just added when she should have subtracted.
"No, no, no," she said. "That's totally wrong."
Flames erupted in Natasha's eyes.
"What did you say?"
she asked. Alex sent a warning glance in Yasmin's direction. They had planned to get Natasha upset, but not that upset. One more word and she might find herself a porcelain figurine. Yasmin ignored him.
"Bindweed makes the foulest magical odor vanish," Yasmin said. stubbornly crossing her arms.
I've seen it work.
Impossible, Natasha said, but there was the slightest flicker of doubt in her tone.
She's not as sure of herself as she seems, Alex thought.
Remember that order of beauty oil you had